to do it safely.
Well, here's the problem, Congressman. As you and I both well know, Congress cannot wield a scalpel. The president can wield a scalpel. Congress can wield a sledgehammer. The only power Congress really has is the power to stop funding the war. And if Congress were to do that, or say, for example, the funding ends after a year, the president then would have a choice. He could either use the remaining funds to withdraw the troops, or the president could play chicken with America's troops. Don't you think the only way to stop this president, not necessarily another president, but this president, would have been for Congress to use the sledgehammer?
Do you trust the president?
No.
Then why are you asking me to trust the president, play chicken with the troops? How can anyone ever ask that question of me? I served with him overseas, and if you think I'm going to trust the president to blink and leave the troops with no money to fight back, I will never do that. But what I will do, and I have done, is vote for a bill that will say no more money to be authorized is authorized after a year, or a bill that says 15 to 24 months. I will do that, and have. But the fact of the matter is, we didn't have the votes to get it past the veto. But when I voted last May, the money was going to run out in July, and we voted to appropriate enough money for four more months. There's no way the troops could get out by September safely. I won't play chicken with our troops.
But
if you don't trust them, why is anyone asking me to?
I guess here's the problem. What that means is that, in effect, Congress gives president all the cards, largely because, let's be fair, because the president is willing to risk American lives in a way that Congress is not, because the president is irresponsible, he can hold that irresponsibility over Congress, and the troops suffer, America suffers, and Congress, which under the Constitution has the right to declare war, and presumably the right to stop a declaration of war, is rendered impotent, isn't it?
Not at all. The Congress had the wrong strategy a year ago in May. The question is not about bringing the troops home, however emotionally appealing that is, and correct that may be. The real question is, how do you end this war appropriately so America's overall security is enhanced? And so to do that, you have to begin a redeployment without a question of at least one, and I believe two brigade combat teams a month. I don't disagree with that. I've said it since the day I've gotten in, because only by a redeploying them will you show the Iraqis that they have to step up to play and assume responsibility. But there were not the votes.
And your position, to be fair, is consistent with both Barack Obama's and Hillary Clinton's.
Without a question. I'm a date certain guy. I still believe setting a date when I came into Congress and I put a bill in that said December 31st, 2007, no money will be authorized for 1 cent in Iraq. But since that time, we put 42,000 more troops into Iraq. So now my bill says, I changed it to a bipartisan vote, because the fact of the matter is we didn't have the vote. So here's what I believe, that we have to get five more brigade combat teams out immediately, more than General Petraeus wants to do. If you get 10 brigade combat teams out, you now have an army at home that is actually ready to deploy elsewhere in the world. And number two, I think we could demonstrate, which if we had done this properly and not let the Petraeus report in September be the Petraeus report, but to be the report about the impact of Iraq on America's overall security, and had the chairman, had the Joint Chiefs of Staff, had the head of the CIA, had the head of the Treasury Department, and held up that mirror to the nation, we probably would have done better and more good for providing, which the Constitution requires Congress does, for the, quote, common defense, unquote. We failed.
I agree with you, Congressman, because you're losing, let's face it, you're losing the propaganda battle. Americans are tired of the war, and they're not just blaming Republicans. They're blaming Democrats, too. They say, hey, we elected you to end this war, and you're giving Bush, admittedly, because Bush is, you know, inflexible, because he's stubborn, because he's willing to play chicken with the troops, for whatever reason, you're giving him a blank check.
No, here's what I believe, all right? What I believe is we forgot, or the party forgot, that this is not a democracy in America. It's a representative democracy. Take Senator Hagel.
Right.
He is a very conservative Republican from Nebraska.
Right.
He opposes this war.
Right.
But his polling right now will probably show he couldn't get reelected. He's not rerunning for other reasons probably. But the reality of the issue here is Congress had another responsibility, which you said. It should have demonstrated to the nation better than it had. It wasn't just about getting the troops home. It was about this strategy is harming our overall strategy. We forgot that we had to reach across the aisle in order to have enough votes in a representative democracy where many Republicans come from districts that even though the overall American polls show that they want to end the war, there are those that come from districts and they have enough votes that support the president or are hesitant about doing it too immediately. If we had demonstrated more clearly by taking advantage of having not General Petraeus come before us, because he set almost against the spirit of the Constitution, a man who's singularly responsible only for Iraq security, he set the tone of the debate for the nation's national security. We failed to hold up, as you said. I don't call it propaganda. I had it as a mirror that said, look at the harm it's doing.
So what does Congress need to do? Do you think that the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, they need to hold hearings?
Without a question.
Okay, so why haven't the party in control of Congress, your party, my party, the Democratic Party, why haven't they done this?
I proposed this back in July before the first and also over the last 4 months.
Is it Pelosi and Reid? I mean, are they the ones stopping this?
Is
it Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid that are in the way, or is it someone else?
I was told by the leadership that the administration would not provide the witnesses. Now,
so what?
You could subpoena them? Witnesses those were, but all I know is this. It should have been a cause célèbre of why we could not get the witnesses before us in order to ask those hard, penetrating questions in the public purview. Is it true, as they've said, is that we cannot deploy the army in order to defend 28,000 troops in South Korea? What is the impact upon us when 42% of our youth coming into America are less capable of handling the sophisticated weaponry that they will need to handle 20 years from now? What's that long-term risk? And by having set that as part of the Petraeus hearing, I believe, and we didn't achieve this, we did not set the tone of the debate for national defense. So I take blame. I think we both parties, titans in both parties, are to blame for not having the proper debate. It defaulted, unfortunately, to a single man, almost, as I said, against the spirit of the Constitution, to set the parameters of the debate on national security. And Iraq security became perceived as America's national security.
Congressman, let me suggest to you something else that I think is against the spirit of the Constitution, and it relates to what you and I want to see done, which is a number of hearings, not just with Petraeus, but on Army readiness, on whether this is helping American security at all, whether, in fact, we are better off or whether we were better off in 2002 when a tin pot dictator named Saddam Hussein was in power, not a good guy, but less danger to American security than now. And that is, as you said, to have all these hearings, you have to use the subpoena power. Congress has the subpoena power, the power to force administration people to testify. Now, as you know well, the House Judiciary Committee subpoenaed Josh Bolton and Harriet Myers, and they refused to show. Harriet Myers, who was ostensibly a nominee for the United States Supreme Court, refused to obey the law. She told Congress, in effect, I don't give a damn about the Constitution. I don't care what you say. I'm not showing up. I have no respect for the law or for America. Now, at that time, the House, properly, voted to hold them in contempt. But it voted to hold them in contempt using the statute that allows the U.S. attorney to hold them in contempt. And the U.S. attorney also said, I'm not going to follow the law. George Bush told me not to follow the law. You know, forget you, Congress. There is a power, which I'm sure you know about, the power of inherent contempt. It is right there in the Constitution. It was used most recently in 1934 because, frankly, presidents since then have chosen to obey the law. Do you support using the power of inherent contempt, which basically means saying to members of the administration, if you won't testify before us, we will hold you in the Capitol building until you agree to testify? Do you support that, Congressman?
I have to be honest with you. I did not know about inherent.
Well, good. Then we're educating Congress here tonight.
You are. But, I mean, it actually says,
yes.
You're telling me that we can hold you
yes.
in the Capitol.
Yes,
physically.
In fact, the sergeant at arms is your police force. It's not quite as big as the military
Could
or the
hold.
Secret Service, but there used to be a jail at the bottom
I
of the Capitol.
I know there used to be a jail. I'm
right.
very aware of that.
That's
and
right.
I did know that they could do, I did not know it was called inherent condemned. I do
yes.
know of all that.
Yeah. It dates back to 1934. It hasn't been used since then, but there's a Supreme Court holding in 1934 that Congress has the inherent power under the Constitution.
Oh, okay. It's not a it's not in the Constitution. What you're saying, the interpretation of the Constitution by the Supreme Court
That's
gave
right.
it in here. Now I understand what you're saying.
That's what I'm
okay.
saying.
I had not known that there was words called inherent in the Constitution.
Yeah, no, it's
okay.
a Supreme Court opinion from 1934 that says Congress has the inherent power to compel obedience to its subpoenas. Today, since the 30s, we've used the U.S. attorney, but as you know, the U.S. attorney refuses to comply.
Okay, but what you're telling me is, at that time, the Supreme Court did not say, that means you can hold them and place them physically. What they said is, Congress has the inherent ability to compel.
That's
and
correct.
At some time, to compel, the Congress used its police force. So
That's correct.
Yeah, now I understand. I understand exactly what you're saying. I had thought you were saying this was in the Constitution. This is an interpretation by the Supreme Court.
Right, but it's one that's never been overturned. It is still good law. And my question for you is, would you support a resolution? And all it takes is the House to vote. You don't even need the Senate for this one.
To where the police force would then of the Capitol go over and hold them and grab them and hold them.
And hold them until they
no.
speak to you.
No, I believe that there is a much better way. And look, We're a ground down here in Washington D.C. On the good ship partisanship. I mean, there is such a we are on show waters of partisanship.
But this
isn't
partisanship.
I believe that the third branch of the government, the Judiciary Committee, the Judiciary branch, should be used appropriately. And I believe that's the way to resolve significant differences between the two branches, not to have the Capitol Police Force walk across to Pennsylvania Avenue the other end and grab someone and bring them back here.
But, Congressman, let me suggest to you that that is the problem, that the president goes way beyond his authority under the Constitution and says, in effect, I don't care how many American troops die. I want to do it my way. I don't care that Congress has the right to declare war. I want to do it my way. And if you want to do something about it, you have to do a court case that's going to take several years when I'm out of office. No president in American history, let me suggest to you, has ever refused to obey a congressional subpoena or ever refused to obey congressional contempt except this one. And if this Congress backs down, that sets a precedent for Congress saying, we have no right to subpoena anybody.
As I sit back and listen to you, as you said, you suggest, that does not mean that this president does not suggest the other side. And the way that it has always been set up in our Constitution, however inefficient it is, and as you well know, Winston Churchill said, democracy is the worst form of government, but it's better than anything else, that the resort to having to use force...
It wouldn't be that much force.
By having to... One person is too much, in my opinion, when there's a judiciary branch set up to resolve inefficiently, potentially, but effectively, the resolution by law. We have placed our government is based on the rule of law.
But this is
not
the rule
men.
Of law, sir. I mean, Congress has the power to require people to testify before it. I would suggest to you, respectfully, that you are abdicating congressional power to require administration officials to appear. Congress has the right of oversight. And now, admittedly, most presidents simply obey. That's the way it works. But when you have a president take the extreme position, which no president has ever taken before, that he will refuse to obey the law, he will refuse to obey your subpoenas, and that your contempt, the way it's normally done through the U.S. attorney, will not be obeyed. Again, no president before this one has taken that. Let me suggest to you that when the president acts outside his constitutional responsibilities, Congress should act within its constitutional responsibilities to make this president obey its will. Otherwise, Congress is feckless.
No, because when we voted for these subpoenas to be enforced,
right,
it also has the ability of the court itself to enforce them.
But that's never been required under the law, sir.
But it can be done under the law, and so we don't have to rely upon the Attorney General.
So let me ask you this. Let's say that 3 years from now, the court rules that you were right. It goes all the way up, you know, to lower court, appellate court, Supreme Court. The court rules that you were right. You have the power to enforce it. George Bush is long gone from office. In fact, more likely, I can tell you, as an attorney, the court will simply hold the whole issue moot. And they'll say, well, Bush is no longer in office. This is no longer an issue before us. We simply won't rule on the question. And so nothing happens. And then the next president says, you know what? I'm not going to allow any of my people to testify before Congress. And then you bring a court case, and that takes several years. And it seems to me, at the end of the day, Congress has given up its power of oversight.
You're making an assumption of that the court will rule it moot.
I think they will. A year from now?
You think. But you don't know. And neither do I know. But I do believe this, and I think I know this, having served in the White House during the Clinton administration and in the congressional side, now having the judiciary side, that the rule of law, before you use force, and if the inherent right of us to enforce the subpoena requires a man to or woman to walk with to walk over and arrest someone from the congressional branch and the executive branch, I believe that if that is the interpretation of what it is, I honestly do believe, without any question in my mind, that the greater good is where the judiciary branch, by our forefathers, was established to adjudicate this. I think the day that we move towards having a Capitol Police moving over to the executive branch to take someone over is not the correct way to go about it.
Let me just suggest to you, and this has been an extended side point, but to me it's an important one because it suggests to me what many Americans see, which is a president acting way outside his constitutional powers and Congress not even rising to the constitutional powers it has. Let me suggest to you that all it would take is a sergeant-at-arms of the Capitol, which you and the House of Representatives could order him to do, to go over to the White House or to the home of Harriet Myers and demand that she be turned over along with all the cameras and all the press, and within 1 hour you'd have your testimony. And that's indeed the way the system is supposed to work. The reason we have an arrest power, a police power, whether it be the president or that of Congress, is to make people obey the law, and the president is not above the law, and I hope you will reconsider using your power, Congressman, because to me it's a broader question than just that of Iraq, but whether or not Congress will rise to the bait.
If I might have a moment to respond.
Please.
There is also the belief on the other side that they have not violated the Constitution. Now, we can disagree with that, but there is the law that established, a Constitution that established a judiciary branch to adjudicate, no matter how strong our passions may be, that third branch was set up strictly because the passions may be such of men that it can do where the men become the interpreter of where the men enforce the law through their own means rather than the judiciary branch. And I hold that as the greater good right now, because we may violently disagree with President Bush, his interpretation of the Constitution, but I firmly believe that ultimately that third branch, established under the Constitution to interpret the law, is a greater good to go about it that way. We aren't abdicating it to an attorney general. We've gone to the court to enforce it, and I believe in the greater good that how our nation was established is well above the passions that one may feel about a president and how he has interpreted the Constitution.
Congressman, I wish we had more time to debate this. Unfortunately, we don't. I do very much appreciate
your... We sure got off the topic, didn't we?
Well, to me, it is the topic, because I find that Congress is not acting in the strong way that I hope you would have the power. I know you have the power in the Constitution, and I hope you would have the will to do that, even when it means, yes, it could be some strong headlines. But we could continue this debate another day. I do very much want to thank you. I know your heart's in the right place. I know if we get a President Obama or Clinton, you'll be able to do the right thing. I just wish you could do the right thing now. But I want to thank you very much for coming here.
We have two fine individuals running in the Democratic.
We've got to end the program, sir. Yes, we've got to end the program. I apologize. But thank you very much for coming here. And we will have you on again for a longer conversation. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.